how to crash a party. There was a point in college where I was making money running small businesses on the side, but I wasn't rolling in piles of money either. Plus, I was extraordinarily cheap back then too. At the same time, I'd also find out about all these fancy parties that rich people went to. Well, I wanted to be a rich person one day, so I figured that going to these parties and being around other rich people would help. The problem was, these parties were always fundraisers for whatever charity, and that meant you had to buy a ticket that would go to charity, and oftentimes this cost $300 or even $1,000+ for one ticket. As a cheap college student, that kind of money made my eyes pop out. There was no way in hell I'd pay that. In particular, one mentor of mine at the time was the one who knew about all these parties, and he had friends that attended them too. I'd hear about all these parties and the cool people he'd get to mingle with in casual situations, and was very envious and wanted to go. You see, I would go to all sorts of speeches made by rich and famous people all the time in college, but since these were public speeches, there were always tons of other people vying for their attention at the same time after the speech was done. At most, you get to have a small Q&A session with someone, but not much more. Being able to casually chat with the rich or famous person was way more appealing to me. So these parties became a thing of intrigue. Eventually, the same mentor who told me about all these parties tipped me off about a very exclusive private party at the Four Seasons Hotel in Austin, with entertainment by the singer Elton John. Now, I wasn't really an Elton John fan at the time, but I was told a lot of very wealthy people would be there. I believe the crowd was limited to about 200 people that night, so this was a very exclusive guest list. Out of the blue, this mentor called me up around 6 p.m. and said, "Wear a tuxedo and get your ass to the Four Seasons right now." He would try to see if he could sneak me in. Even if I was willing to pay the high price of admission, it wouldn't really matter. This was a strictly invite-only affair, and there were no tickets simply for sale. I immediately dropped everything I was doing and started changing into my tux. Oh, wait, I didn't have a tuxedo, so my non-existent tuxedo. See, this was early in college, and I still didn't own any really nice clothes. So I put on a plain black dress shirt and a pair of khaki pants, both of which were very large and baggy on me, and I headed over there. Now, the first indication that I knew I didn't belong at this event was when everyone in their Mercedes and Porsches were being directed to the valet parking area. I balked at the $7 price and immediately knew I wasn't going to pay goddamn $7 to park. Cheap college student, you know. So I self-parked and walked into the hotel nervous as hell. In my head, I started having all these thoughts. What if they were going to kick me out? Or what if they know I'm not invited? What if they ask me for a ticket? These thoughts started running through my head, but then I remembered the advice of my mentor. He told me, just walk in like you own the place and they won't say a thing. So this comforted me a bit until I got to the hotel and it was a bunch of tall, older white men with impeccable tuxedos and a bunch of white women with very expensive gowns and dresses and jewelry on. I gulped a bit because in walks a small Indian kid dressed in unironed baggy khakis and a plain black t-shirt. I looked like the help. In fact, the help was dressed better than I was. They were at least wearing tuxedos. For a second, the striking difference between me and the rest of the crowd made me nervous. But alas, I kind of pulled through it and said, fuck it. What's the absolute worst thing that can happen here? It's just a private party. I'm not breaking into a bank or a federal building, right? I mean, at the absolute most, they'll ask me to leave. That's all. They can just say no. That's all they can do. So I stuck my head up in the air like I was fucking King Charles and charged past the check-in line where everyone was getting their tickets checked and getting their seat numbers. I pretended I was in a hurry, not really worrying about gently shoving people out of the way, and I could see the security guards eyeing me down, and there were a lot of them. But my hurriedness and sheer balls of pushing my way through the crowd made it appear that I belonged. And it worked. No one said a thing. I realized the security guards were likely getting paid like 10 bucks an hour. And if this stupid little kid was someone's son or part of Elton John's entourage or whatever, they weren't going to risk physically stopping him. So I was in and I was thrilled. But now the hard part came and I kind of gulped because I didn't know anyone. The tiny guest list ensured that there were only about 200 or so people that would be there, and it seemed like they all knew each other, or at least that's what I felt like. Immediately, I know this would be fly or die, so I decided to fly and meet some people so it looked like I wasn't some sort of loser who was just crashing a charity event, which I of course, was. Now, I saw a guy, and of course, he was a tall white dude wearing a tuxedo, and he was briefly standing alone as he left a conversation, and I said something along the lines of, "Hey, it feels good to wear the penguin suit in summer, right?" Making a lame tuxedo joke. And he laughed, and I immediately started saying, "Yeah, I said screw it this time, it's too hot," referring to my less than appropriate attire. Fortunately, it was hot outside, so I did have an excuse. He laughed again, and then I immediately asked, "What line of business are you in?" I still remember this years later. This guy said, "Carpet." And my lame conversation starter and not so subtle cues that I totally belonged there worked. His business piqued my curiosity, and we started having a cool conversation about how we built up a carpeting empire. Now, fortunately, I ran houseofrave.com, a little bitty drop shipping company on the net, and a few other small businesses at the time, so I had something to contribute to the conversation and talk about, which fascinated him. Now, of course, I never told him exactly how small all my companies were, so from the conversation, he probably thought I was some young tech entrepreneur that made millions in the tech bubble. Now, this was good at the time because this is my first time hanging out with so many high-caliber people, so I wanted that misunderstanding on my side. I mean, fake it till you make it, right? Now, anyhow, I made sure to get this guy's name so I can at least fall back knowing someone at the party. This is very important. I then hit up another person and another and another and another. After a while, I was walking through the cocktail room saying, like, "What's up, John? Hey, Tim, did your wife reach yet?" And kind of like schmoozing, right? I mean, it was totally schmoozing at its finest. And I've got to say, it worked like a charm. Now, with all my quote-unquote friends there, anyone viewing from the outside would have definitely thought I belonged at this party. It was also at this party that I discovered a remarkably effective friend pickup technique for these particular types of parties. And it was simply the bar line. That's right, the bar line. You see, at all these charity events, the booze is free and flowing. And whatever you want, it's all there and 100% free. So I guess they do this for two reasons. One, you already pay a lot to get into these, so you should be getting something out of it. And two, they probably want to get you nice and drunk for the upcoming auctions. I mean, the drunker you are, the more you spend. Anyhow, back to the free booze and the bar line trick. Usually at the cocktail hours, there's always, before the main event, everyone is like lining up for drinks at the bar because the bar is open. And at this party, there was at least like 5 to 8 people in line at any given time. And I would simply stand in line behind someone and immediately strike up a conversation with the following line. And it would be something lame like this, like, "Oh man, a line? I need my booze now. Next time I'm bringing a flask." And the person would laugh and remark about the lines the whole night too. And I'd ask them, "So what you getting when our number is called?" Just to strike up conversation, you know? And they say something like, "Oh, me and my wife always drink gin and tonic," or whatever they said. And at that point, I would say, "Good choice. You come to these often? I've never seen you around." You see my little subtle cue that, like, pretending like I go there all the time or something? Now, it doesn't really matter how lame. The point was I was trying to stay in conversations, and it worked. And I'd also make it a very strong point to introduce myself quickly after so I could get their name also. This is very, very important. Now, the "what line of business are you in" question would pop up quickly, so I'd have something else to know them by than just a name, you know? Now, my bar line trick was very effective because by default, you've got a minute or two to spend chatting with this person. And they're usually not going to be a complete douchebag and because, you know, they're basically stuck there with you for 2 or 3 minutes. So usually everyone was pretty nice. Now, I was building up my arsenal of friends at the party one by one, and then it would start to snowball. For example, I'd be talking to someone named John when out of the blue, he'd see one of his friends named Bill. Now, John would call Bill over and say hello and introduce me to Bill. Now, this Bill guy thinks I somehow actually belong at this party. And not to mention, I'm talking to a crowd of people who appear to know me, which is always good for the party planners so they don't get suspicious of you. Now, just shortly after entering the room, knowing nobody, I'm engrossed in conversations, saying hi to people left and right, and totally like, quote unquote, work in the room. Now, everything was great until dinner was announced. It was a packed house, and every seat in the ballroom was pretty much taken. I'd never seen a room, you know, so taken. There's always an extra chair, but there was nothing there. So I went around from friend to friend to scope out if they had a seat, but all their tables were 100% packed to pretty much the limit. So I kind of panicked and just left the ballroom since this was my first time, and I retreated to the cocktail area where there weren't that many people, and I pretended to be on an important business call, just like fake talking into my cell phone. Kind of loserish, I know, but at the time, that's what I did. Now, eventually I found some other people hanging out there during dinner and struck up conversations. A fortunate break was soon after dinner started, Elton John started playing in front of the guests, and a lot of people got out of their chairs and stood up towards the front of the room for a better view. Now, this was really lucky for me, because I simply went up to the front of the room with everyone and pretty much enjoyed the most mind-blowing performance I've ever seen. Now, just a side note, I never really cared or knew who Elton John was other than that Lion King Circle of Life song, but after that day, I've been an Elton John fan ever since. This guy was amazing. It was just one man and a piano, and that room was just filled with unbelievable music. Anyhow, I enjoyed myself, got to see a mind-blowingly great performance, but more importantly, is I was mingling in a group full of wealthy people who I admired, and that was the goal. And as a young college student who wasn't very rich, that was pretty fucking cool. Now, normally I didn't have access to this kind of environment, but as with a lot of things in life, if you want it bad enough, you sometimes just have to go out and grab it. Now, since this party, I've crashed many parties I wasn't getting invited to or just flat out couldn't afford at the time. So some of the methods of getting to these parties or events were borderline illegal. Let me rephrase that. They were definitely illegal sometimes. And I've got criticism for that. People would say, all these parties are giving money to charity and you're just sneaking in. You're eating the food, drinking the booze, all for free at the expense of a charity. And, you know, if you look at it in that light, I mean, I look like a monster. But I look at it this way. There's a lot of people at these events I want to be like. And currently, or at least at the time, I was not like them. In reality, I didn't even have access to those things and couldn't afford to pay the price to get in. But making certain connections, learning certain things from people in there could help me become more successful in the future. And at some point, hopefully I'll be able to buy tables full of, you know, I have tons of tables at these events. But at the time, I couldn't. So I had to get in some other way. And a lot of people in the beginning of successful careers did things that were not completely legal or ethical, but it was how they scraped by in the beginning. I mean, some quick examples are, in middle school, I used to illegally download music and burn it onto CDs for paying customers. Richard Branson of Virgin Music Empire used to drive a van full of new records back and forth between countries in Europe to avoid paying taxes on them. The founders of Apple, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, made their very first product in 1971, and it was a device that illegally exploited the phone networks so you could illegally place calls for free. And something like Las Vegas in its early days was, you know, a hangout for pimps, thugs, prostitutes, drug dealers, mobsters. But over time, it matured and grew into a proper tourist attraction. Now, out of ghetto-ness and scrappiness emerges something more refined. And, well, that was my justification. Now, through crashing parties, I got to meet all sorts of people like Lance Armstrong, Michael Dell, Elton John, Andy Roddick, Paul Mitchell, and a bunch of other non-famous business people you won't recognize. But I also got a ton of advice from people at these parties and learned a lot about various business. A quick side note, I used to do this thing called the success game, or I don't know, remember what I called it, but I had a little text file and I would ask all these really successful people. I would say, you know, you're so successful. What are some of the quick secrets to your success? I know there's a lot of them, but what are some of them that stand out? And I would compile this into a list that I just used for myself, and I would see patterns, and I learned from these people. I didn't just go there to drink booze and eat food, although that was a part of it. I went there to learn. But let's refocus here and show you how to crash parties too, if you've got the balls. Now, step one to crashing a party. Finding a party is by far the hardest part I found. You have to live in at least a moderately good-sized city. I live in Austin, Texas, and the whole time I lived here, I honestly never really thought a lot of fancy, rich people charity events and parties happened here, but I was really wrong. The mentor that told me about most of these parties taught me to keep a spreadsheet of all the parties I'd hear about or attend, and usually the parties would happen at the same time every year. Very smart, right? So I had about 50 web pages bookmarked that I would go through each week. They were the big charity websites, and I would keep their events pages bookmarked and tracked on a spreadsheet, just a regular old Excel spreadsheet. I'd also read those high society magazines about the Austin area. You can find them at nice spas or rich area grocery stores. They're all around town, and they give them away for free, and they usually have a lot of pictures from high profile events in there. And what I would do is write down the event and the date that it happened, so next year I could crash it. Now, I had bookmarks of all the event pages around Austin, especially the University of Texas speakers that would come in town, so maybe I could, you know, get together with them or something if I tried. Now, it's not only high-profile events you can crash, but lots of university private things. A friend once tipped me off that Michael Dell would be speaking at our law school class. Apparently, Michael Dell's brother taught at the UT Law School for a while. So I crashed that, and it was an amazing talk, and it was only maybe 100 people in the room that got to privately hear Michael Dell talk and banter with his brother. You know, this is not the typical Michael Dell you'd see in front of a press conference or something where he has to act all proper. And so step number one is finding out about the parties. Start keeping tabs of what's going down. It involves doing research every week, but it's the only way to find out about this stuff unless you've got someone on the inside. Step two, buy a tuxedo. This one's for the guys. I mean, if a girl crashes a party, she could probably usually get away with having a decently nice dress. But in my experience, it's better to go alone because the point of these parties is not to go with a date. It's to force yourself to mingle with others. And if you have a date with you, you can get complacent and just hang out together without getting out of your comfort zone. So for guys, buy a regular old black tuxedo. It's always okay to be overdressed, but you don't want to show up to a black tie event, which means a tuxedo in case you don't know that, and get turned away due to the dress code. Now, I bought my tuxedo at K&G's Men's Warehouse, and it was a grand total of $150. It's pretty cheap, okay? They're really not that expensive when you consider it'll usually cost at least $300 just to attend one of these events. So it's actually a good investment. So if you show up overdressed for a party, if it's just, you know, a suit and tie or casual, and you show up in a tuxedo, at least it's a great conversation starter. I mean, I've done that before and it worked great. I'd say my tuxedo has paid for itself many, 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 many times over by now. So it's funny how simply wearing a tuxedo gives you automatic status. It's like wearing a police outfit. Like, it gives you automatic status to a degree. And it works so well, I find it absolutely hilarious. I mean, one really cool event we crashed was a fashion show on a freaking military base at night. That means you had to drive to this very specific location at night on a military base. And even though I didn't have a ticket and they were checking, the fact that I showed up at the exact private location in a freaking tuxedo let the people working there know that I probably belonged. I mean, they didn't even question for a moment if I belonged. But if I had waltzed in with jeans and a t-shirt or something like that, you know, it may have been a different story. Okay, on to step three for crashing a party. Keep old name badges and wristbands from different events. Almost every time you check in with a ticket, they will give you some sort of identification that you belong in the party. And almost every time, it's a lanyard you wear around your neck, a name badge to put around your shirt, or a wristband. Now, I have a collection of these, and whenever I go to an event, I bring a bunch of them. Now, I scope out what everyone is getting, and then I put on the closest thing, and I'll keep them in my car or something like that and get them if I need. Now, at events that I've crashed, it's almost always a lanyard with a name badge at the end that everyone wears around their neck or a wristband. So I've already got a couple of these, and I just pick the lanyard or wristband that looks the closest and wear it around my neck. And the trick is, if you're wearing a lanyard with a name badge, here's the trick if the name badge is very identifiable. Tuck it under your suit. I've done this so many times. This way it appears you're wearing the lanyard, but they can't see the badge you're wearing. And by sheer assumption, everyone presumes you've just accidentally pulled your suit jacket over the lanyard. Whoopsie. Like, you know, my bad. Sorry, didn't know. But I would attend entire conferences like this, like making sure that my name badge was under the suit so no one could see it. And even if the lanyard color was different, they would just presume you had a different type of access badge. Usually there's like a VIP badge and a gold platinum badge or whatever. So there's so many different types of badges that people just get confused sometimes. So step number four, press badges. Now in college, I had run a blog called nevblog.com. And I also, well, that's probably what you're reading this on right now. And I also published three articles in the University of Texas newspaper, which happened to be the number one college newspaper in the country, not to brag. So I would sometimes just make up shit and say I was covering the event as press. Now, this works surprisingly well. Think about it. Every event likes press coverage, and I was a quote-unquote member of the press. One of the really neato things I found out about press access was that the press almost always has its own table at a lot of big events. This means you'll always have a spot for dinner and you'll have something to eat and they'll treat you well and all that kind of stuff. You have somewhere to go and rest. Now, I would say it's better to still go and mingle and try to crash a seat with someone else rather than just sit at the press table. So you can also sometimes get into pretty exclusive press conferences with Prexesses. And at one event I crashed, I got to meet the Prime Minister of Malaysia. And I won't go into details about that because the methods I used to crash that event were highly illegal. But the short of it is, I had press access, yada, yada, yada. I got to be in a room with only 25 people, half of which were big-ass security guards, and the Prime Minister of Malaysia giving a press address 5 feet in front of me. So I then politely asked one of his assistants if I could take a personal picture with him. And I didn't dare approach the guy myself with the level of security he had, and I got the picture. You can actually Google image the term Prime Minister of Malaysia Neville, and you'll see the photo. Now, step five to crashing a party. Do your research at the venue beforehand. Now, almost always you can find alternative entrances to enter the party. Usually there's a common entrance, and then there's the other ways to get in. One time, me and a friend had no luck getting to the main entrance of a party at the Hilton Ballroom, and we made the mistake of showing up on time with everyone else. So, we got rejected, and so we went up to the hotel's 17th floor, just a random number, and we picked out a room number to lie so we could say we were staying there. Now, then we found the service elevators. We're both in tuxedos, and we went down a few floors, and a maid got on the elevator. We made a joke that our room was close to the elevators, and we were too lazy to walk to the real elevators or whatever, and she smiled, laughed, and got off a few floors down, and honestly, I don't think she understood what the hell we were saying or cared. But then the elevator stopped again, and a freaking security guard cop got on with us. And so we're like, oh, crap. Damn, we're gonna get kicked out. And the security guard, he was a young black dude, and he actually kind of looked like the singer Usher. And we immediately laughed and said, sorry, man, we're in room 1716, and we're just too damn lazy to walk to the regular elevators. This is right across our room. And he responded, oh, you guys look like $1 million. Where are you trying to go? And keep in mind, we're both in tuxedos. And we told him we're going to the big ballroom downstairs and pretended to play dumb. And we're just like, can we just get out on the fourth floor and go there? Because it's on the fourth floor. And he's like, no way, man. This is a service area. I'll take you to the ballroom. So we got off on the fourth floor, and the security guard was leading us through a maze of service area halls, and thank God he did, because it was so complicated. And we ended up coming out to the back entrance of the ballroom, where there was another security checkpoint over there. And the security guard just kind of nudged his way through and was like, hey, these guys are with me. And he let us into the party. And me and my friend were just laughing our asses off that we first got kicked out of the line for having no tickets, and now we had our own police escort into the party. So this is all thanks to simply knowing the venue a bit before arriving. Now, step number six, and we're almost done. The trick to crashing a party is to own the room. Now, before you walk in, literally just tell your brain that I own this joint. These motherfuckers work for me. Like, you got to be arrogant almost. And this air of confidence or arrogance you give off will discourage people from stopping you. You know, when you look like you're on a mission, you know what the fuck you're doing. People don't try to stop you as much. And in fact, I'm going to give you my number one no-fail method for getting into a fancy party. And I was thinking of selling this as a product once, but I was like, screw it, let's write a gigantic blog post. This is my tip, and it works every single time. So if you use all the tips I've given you and couple it with this last one, you'll definitely be able to crash pretty much any party. Now, here's how you do it. You wear a nice tuxedo. Bring a plain wine glass, these cost $1 a piece at Walmart, a cocktail napkin, just a plain old cocktail napkin, a cell phone, and a flask with some wine in it, red wine preferably, but whatever. Now, right before you walk in the venue, pour some of the wine into the wine glass and wrap the cocktail napkin around it. Now you're ready to walk in, so it looks like you're holding a wine glass that you got from the bar. Now, start talking on your cell phone, holding the wine glass and cocktail napkin so it appears you were already inside. And now start power walking through the door, talking on your phone at the same time. Now, if someone has the balls to stop you and say, sir, can we check you for your ticket? You simply shush them as if you're annoyed, like since you're talking on the phone, and keep on walking. So you walk by hurried and they're just like, sir, can we start? And you just shh. And you almost like be mean to them, you know? You don't have to necessarily do that, but you can kind of like give them a glance or just keep walking. And just like act like you own the place. This has worked for me every single time. And if you look at the actual blog post, nevblog.com/how-to-crash-a-party with dashes in between it, you'll see an illustration of what I do over there. Now, that look definitely works. That shh kind of thing definitely works. Now think about it. The person checking people in is probably making $12 an hour or as a volunteer, and they don't want to risk being mean to the rich person walking inside in a hurry, who's clearly been inside before because he's holding a half glass full of wine. Now, the way you look with a wine glass, a cell phone, the hurried walk, the tuxedo attire, the attitude, is an almost guaranteed admission inside if you pull it off correctly. So there you go. That's how to find and crash parties. Now, most people reading or listening to this will never do this ever. I mean, it takes a lot of balls and determination to try something like this, but in the end, it was totally worth it. The people I met, the stories I got, the things I learned, and the pictures I got from these parties were pretty amazing. Now, I definitely think it was one of those things that helped me, you know, grow and drive me. And if nothing else, it provided for some damn interesting stories and fun times. So this is Neville Medora. Good night.